Okay, all flight controllers, go, no go for landing. Retro.
Go,
I
don't go.
Titan, go.
GNC,
go.
Econ,
go.
Control,
go.
Ninth Planet Audio.
Capcom, we're go for landing.
Welcome to the Turek Books podcast. I'm here with Alyssa Limparis.
Beautiful. That was literally perfect.
Okay.
You doubted yourself, but that was perfect.
Okay, then we'll keep it. As someone with a last name that no one ever gets.
What do people do? Turek?
Yeah, Turek.
Yeah.
Yeah. She has a special on Peacock called No Bad Days. I mean, we'll probably cut this out.
No,
but
I think this is good. What it is I think, like, the fact that we're both sitting here, but then you're talking about me, like, that's what's
and
making
I'm staring
me weird,
at the table as I'm doing.
As if I'm about to enter, but I am, because it's kind of like on a show, I would be backstage and then I'd come on. And so here, yeah, you're looking at the
mic. Wouldn't it be a little too intense if I was making eye contact?
100%.
It was a special. She's on got Peacock, a No Bad Days.
Yeah, I mean, that's worse. Just, for
yeah,
sure.
Like, that's
for
one of
sure.
Those no eye contact moments. Yeah. But yeah, there's no good place
there's really,
to look.
Yeah.
So
I find that a lot in life, even in convos sometimes, because even if we were to hold this eye contact,
yeah.
This is starting to get intense.
Yeah.
And then you look away, but then where are you
yeah,
looking?
Where do you go?
Yeah.
The TV's turned off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's why the phones are such a saving grace.
They are.
Because you're just like, it's just a place to look.
It's a place to look.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Right now we have no phones. There's nowhere to look.
Well, I think that's why we have the books on the podcast.
I like that.
Yeah. It's like there's a moment that arrives where you're like, boom. Okay,
we have
let's
something
go
to
these.
To look at, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So they're kind of the, it's like when you have a baby at the family get-together
exactly.
And all you're doing is talking about the baby.
Exactly.
And it's like, wow, this baby's working hard for us. Like,
exactly.
Or a dog.
But absolutely, once a baby's introduced, it like really helps
it
everything.
Smooths over a lot of trauma between you and your relatives.
Exactly.
If you just keep it on the baby.
Put it on the baby and then they have to grow up and deal with it and then they'll put it on other people and the cycle continues. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They'll inherit the need for attention. They'll be like, why aren't people always talking about me?
And then they'll do stand up. They'll have a podcast.
That's right.
We'll be on it.
And we just explained our own upbringings. I met you 2 weeks ago at a stand-up comedy show.
Yes.
I just really enjoyed talking to you.
I was heckling you.
You were heckling
me. I was in the front row.
Yeah, there was like some psychological games you were playing that definitely threw me off for my performance, but I still liked you.
Yeah.
So the gaslighting worked.
Yeah.
And yeah.
No, we were on this show. It was a what's it called? A nostalgia show.
A nostalgia show. Yeah. A meme page put on a comedy show. It was really fun.
Yep.
And yeah, then I asked you to do this and you were kind enough to say yeah. You also live blocks away, so that feels good.
Totally. I came without books and then realized I needed books, so we took a little field trip to the home instead.
Yeah.
And we... Can I say you took a sit on the couch?
Yeah, you have a very comfortable couch.
Thank you. The couch sort of, caught some people's eye. People started talking about the couch, sitting on the couch.
Couches
in many
and
ways,
pillows.
We don't have a baby or a dog, but that couch is
doing
the heavy lifting. Everyone's always talking about the couch. It's so deep. Yeah,
what's
yeah, it's
it
the
called?
Extra
it's
deep.
West Elm.
West Elm, that's right.
Not IKEA.
Yeah, it's the harmony. It's the harmony.
The
yeah.
harmony, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would have been the most seamless product placement of all time.
If
any furniture makers out there.
I mean, that's the thing. If you could get a West Elm sponsorship, that would be the peak for me.
I'd be like, pay me in couch.
Pay me. If I could get paid in couch, I would be happy. I tell you, I miss that couch when I'm gone, when I'm on the road or even just here, I'm thinking a little bit about the couch.
Does your boyfriend send you pictures of it? You're like, what's it look like in the afternoon sunlight? Can you send me a little FaceTime? Can the couch FaceTime right now?
Exactly.
It's a comfortable, deep couch. Everyone's always looking for a new couch or new pillows on their bed. Like, you never get it right. And then when you meet someone who does get it right, you're kind of in awe.
Because I'm not there with the bed. The bed's fine. I'm not there with the bed yet.
Exactly.
But the couch is, I'll never go, yeah.
That's, yeah. So, I mean, that's where we're at.
And I'll tell you what I do on the couch. I read.
Okay.
How do you like that?
All right. Yeah. So I guess the reason I bring up how we met is that, I don't know a ton about you, which is kind of fun.
True.
And I don't know your reading history. Did you grow up reading books? Do you read them now? does it factor into your life?
I know.
I just thought you were really cool, and I was like, hey, can you bring a few books?
Thanks. I know. I feel a little embarrassed because I said yes, but I'm not an avid reader. I think I grew up reading a lot. My dad was a big reader. I think, I forget when I dropped off, but I think once it became not mandatory, like I feel like after college, it just became something where I just didn't really pick it up too much again. But I'll get in rhythms like Sally Rooney. I got in a Sally Rooney kick. This probably speaks to, yeah, I read every single one of, I think it was like, I don't know, a week that I read every single one of her books.
Really?
Yeah. So I like loved her and I just had to read everything she had written. And then I did, and then I don't think I read for like a year afterwards.
And you're just walking around keeping a pristine file cabinet of Sally Rooney.
That's it.
Like, I don't want anyone to ruin this.
Yeah, I think that was it. I this is a little bit, I feel, about me, though. Like, I don't like maybe new things necessarily. So I think I like Sally Rooney, and then I'm like, I know that I like her, so I can have comfort going into a new book being like, I already like this. I'm like that with shows too. Like, I'm a real rewatcher of shows.
Yeah.
I am, it's hard for me to get into new things.
Yeah.
So I think that's the same with books. Once I liked her, I felt like, okay, I'm safe here. I can read all of her books. But then with a new author, it's like, well, I don't know what I'm getting. And then I just don't get
yeah.
it.
Well, you're trying to like, are you trying to protect your mental?
That might be it. That might be it, that like, a lot of our lives in entertainment is unpredictable, so there might be something about, like, I like my nighttime or my relaxation to be predictable. I like
yes.
to get comfort from this time. I don't need this to be up and down because my day is up and down. Like, in the pandemic, I feel like I would watch new shows. It was almost like there was so nothing going on
right.
that I could handle some,
yeah.
like...
Introduce some volatility
right.
to your day because
yeah.
it wasn't happening the way it normally
Right, but it's
does.
Like because our days are kind of all over the place, it's like I like the consistency of something I already know.
Yeah, well, I think this is like really interesting hearing that from you because how did you find your way into Sally Rooney? You have Normal People, a novel by Sally Rooney sitting on this table. I've never read her.
Really?
I don't know anything about her, actually.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. Well, you know, I actually didn't even watch Normal People, but Normal People became a very popular show.
Okay.
And
a Hulu original. See, I've never heard of it.
Yeah. Wow. That's Paul Mescal. You know Paul Mescal?
Yes.
I feel like that was his first. I'm actually
not
sure. He might have done other things, but I feel that's when I first got to know him.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't even know which one this is another thing with me with books. I'm a big giver away of books once I've read them. So
great.
Her other books are in other people's hands at the moment, but I didn't come in with Normal People. I came in with either Conversations with Friends or, I think Conversations with Friends was my first one. She writes in a way that feels just very intimate, I'd say. It doesn't, it feels like a blog in a way of this author.
Yeah.
Which I like. I'm, yeah. And I think she talks a lot about, this book, Normal People, I just flew through them and I like wept through them.
Okay.
Yeah, I wonder, like, as a man, I'm not sure, it's a very, like, female POV, so I'm like, I wonder what it would be like, but.
Yeah, I bet it would be good.
Yeah, I'm sure it'd be good.
Yeah.
But there was something about it where I was just like, ah. This is how I feel. You're speaking to how I feel.
And like, so I'm sure there's, if anyone's listening to this, there are people who are the same way as you. And like,
yeah.
they don't like, they're not obsessive readers or they have an inertia toward things for whatever reason. So like, what is it that when a book does come across, like that you're like, yeah, I'll give this a shot. Is it just like that first page or is it a friend recommending it to you?
I think a friend is big. A friend is big, and it's whenever I am in a book, I love it. I love how it makes me feel. Like I'm like even remembering when I was really into when I blew through those books, it was great. It was like I looked forward to my nighttime. So, yeah, I guess it's probably like first 10 pages are pretty important, or first chapter. If I'm out at that point, I'm probably. Oh, maybe that's another thing. I'm a little obsessive.
Okay.
So if I were to start something, I would probably have to finish it. So then that's another piece.
Right.
Is I'm like, once with Sally, I'm like, okay, I know that I'm going to like it. And then it's like, if I pick something else up and I'm 20 pages in, I'm like, well, now I got to read the whole thing, okay. But I don't really want to. And then it's a little bit of a chore.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe I drop books, but I feel once I've started, I'm like, I got to read it.
Yeah, it just sounds like you know yourself and you know your habits and what it takes. So it's just cool that like that certain books still do filter through. Didn't Paul Mescal, wasn't the thing on the internet like he's been going on dates and then running away from the women halfway through the date?
Yes, yeah, and I don't know if this is like a detail that's been fabricated, but I heard someone describe it that they were like, he literally says like, hey, look over there, and then runs, which to
me
is
just... Are you telling
me
he's using the oldest trick in the book?
He's literally using the... Oh, I think there's a bird, and then running. That, to me, is so funny.
And are people saying it's like a fetish of his, or it's like an anxiety that just comes on at once, or like what? I don't know. I don't know why I'm detouring down that. But
no, I know. I mean,
it is this unanswered question. As you consume content all day, you're like, okay, I heard about that.
What's right, right. It's almost like we hear so much. But yeah, if you really sit and think about that, you're like, that's crazy.
That's crazy. This is a movie star.
This is a movie star.
And
he's got to know it's going to come
on,
out.
Like all these movie stars are on dating apps now. And right. I know that's a reflection of the time, but some part of me is like, it shouldn't have to work that way for movie stars, but I guess it does now.
Right, right. Well,
I don't know.
It's in a way, I guess if you're a movie star, though, you're like, I'll clean up.
Yeah,
you're
like, and I won't even have to leave the home.
Exactly. Yeah. So it almost makes, like,
it makes even more sense.
I would guess, because you have to imagine even if you saw Paul Mescal on an app, you'd be like, well, this can't really be him.
Right.
It'd be so shocked. So, like, even just the fact that it's him, I think, would make you go, I'm in. Like, he probably doesn't have to do a lot of.
Yeah, right.
You're just so, like, you're really it.
Yeah, I'll be at the sushi restaurant whenever you want.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing, like, when you see someone you know from the internet in person. Like, maybe you follow a health. I followed this, like, health influencer. And then, like, I saw him in a restaurant, and I was like, yeah, of course he'd be there. Like, he's on my phone every day. Why wouldn't he be here? And it's like, no, but wait. Like, he's here. He's, like, in person.
Right. It's like how I felt when I went to my first, like, Celtics game as a kid. I was like, that's them. That's them from the TV. It was so crazy. And now that's just kind of it all the time, but with people on the internet.
Yeah, on the internet.
Because we know you... When you watch someone, you know someone so well, and then you see them in person, but you don't actually know them. It's got to be a
strange thing.
Strange thing.
Do people like recognize you from the internet?
Sometimes, yeah, yeah. Sometimes they recognize me, and I feel like they probably recognize you from like my East Coast stuff.
Okay,
that's one avenue, and those are usually like fun conversations. And then the other avenue is just like they think. That they don't know, they can't place me. And then that's probably like maybe a commercial or you've seen me on your screen, but you don't quite know how. And it's I sold you your car.
Where did you sell me my car? It's driving me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Do you like Jack in the Box? Of course you do. Guess why? Me. Do you do commercials?
No. Oh, okay, I did in my early 20s for a couple years.
Cool.
And I developed an obsessive relationship with my mailman because I was like living off the residuals of this commercial I was in.
See,
and
folks
I, like,
at home, so back in the day there was mail.
There was
mail.
He's,
what he's talking about is he got physical checks in the mail.
And actors, there were residuals too.
And actors, there was money. No, commercials is still, I feel, a good
It's cool,
yeah,
right?
Still good residuals, but yeah, the idea of checks is so funny.
Yeah,
I'm like,
checks.
It's just all.
Is it all direct deposit?
Oh
now?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all. Yeah, it's all. Yeah.
Okay, so this is So the mailman would come in on his pony, and if the bandits didn't get him before he showed up, and then so I knew he came every. Usually the checks would come on a Friday. I knew the time he'd be there on a Friday. If he wasn't there, I'd grow concerned. And just pray that one of those checks would show up in my mailbox so that I wouldn't have to get another job.
Totally.
Yeah, and eventually I did have to get another job, but it was like a sweet couple of years. Well, and then I went on unemployment because you can do that when the commercials dry up.
Mm.
And then, eventually I had to get another job. But, it was fun, and like usually like the weird thing about being an actor on a commercial set is you're like the last thing they think about. It's like the product, the everything, and then they're like, "Oh yeah, and you get over here real quick, eat the chicken wing," and you're like, "Great, I'm eating the chicken wing."
Yeah, totally.
Pretty cool way to make money if you can.
Yeah.
I'm so intrigued by your pile because these are very special books. Like because you're not, you don't have 25 on your nightstand right now.
Right.
You don't have the emotional support books on the nightstand that everyone talks about, who's like obsessed with reading. So it's
I want to hear a little bit about that. Is that like, do people reread books?
Yeah, well, there's like memes of people like, this is my emotional support stack. And yeah, I have currently 20 books on my nightstand. It's
so you love reading.
Yeah, I love reading, but I think I also get like a certain emotional comfort from books.
Really?
They make me feel wealthy because I value them so much and they're not that expensive.
Mm.
So there is like a material comfort to them. But then also, yeah, just like the way you would flip the channels on a TV, I kind of do that with books.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
So you might be...
I have like 10 at a time that I'm,
I'm
in. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How do you like that?
Well, and so on my Instagram, my book Instagram, I have this little pinned message to people who are following, which is like, hey, if I'm posting books, don't panic like I'm this person reading 10 books a week. I'm like, these are things I've read, I'm in the process of reading, whatever. I get a lot of anxiety when I see too many books on the internet because I feel like I want to read all of them. And that's what I think this podcast is too, is like, you can't read all the books you want to read. So sometimes someone will tell you about them and you get to experience them through that. Like, I may never get to Sally Rooney, but some part of me feels like I know Sally Rooney a little bit because you just told me.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a weird, I mean, it's like almost like you said, you have to finish things. It's like, I have to always have unfinished things.
Wow. Right. Right.
Or that's something.
Yeah. That's what's wild to me. That's an, I don't think I could. Yeah.
But I don't think it's effective. Yeah. And I also think like you hope that one takes the lead. Like I brought this book, it's called Them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just like a real quick humor journalist early 2000s read that I got recommended like a week ago, and it zipped to the front of the line. I finished it in a day or two.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's it was really good because it's this British guy, John Ronson, who embeds himself with all these hate groups in like late 90s. Then 9/11 happens, and right after. And he's kind of like humanizing their disenfranchisement more than he's like mocking them. But it is a very funny book, too. And so he's with like these Islamic sort of, I don't know, like the critics of them would describe them as like hardliners. But really, they're kind of, they have valid points. And but then, you know, 9/11 happens and it changes the relationship, and he's Jewish, so he's like with like the leader of the KKK interviewing him down in the Ozarks, and the guy's like wanting to refurbish the KKK's image, so he's like, we don't use these words anymore, and the writer is like, and I can't tell this KKK leader this, but a lot of his like jokes, it's kind of Jewish shtick, you know, he's like he's kind of being funny like an urban Jew, and yeah, so anyway, yeah, so,
and now I'm noticing on that it says Conway Public Library. Is that from New Hampshire, or
this is
that just
a situation where like you buy it online used,
okay,
and you don't know where it shows up from, so this person probably stole this book from, I mean, I'm sure someone maybe bought this from a library sale and then they resold it, and yeah, that's the cool part too with the used books, is like you'll find little like concert tickets in them, or like a note on the front, be like, Judy, I think you'll love this book.
Now I will say, I'm having sort of a, like, even just seeing this, I'm having this like memory of like the library was very big for me growing up.
Right.
I went to the library a lot as a kid, and my dad was such a big reader that I'm also, and he would like track all of his books. So he had like a binder full of books that he would track like what he read, how it was, what he rated it as. And I wonder also if like him dying stopped, like, I think maybe I took a lot of book suggestions from him as well. And like, yes. I do think a lot of my behavior like changed when he died. So I'm even seeing this. I'm like, oh, we would go to book sales all the time. Like I used to read a lot. So I do wonder too, if it's just something that kind of dropped off.
There's some grief. There might be anchored in there.
I don't know. I feel like grief is at a certain point, you know, anchored in everything. Yeah. And maybe this is more just like behavioral of like, he read so much that a lot of how I found books was like through him.
Through
so
him.
Then when I didn't have that avenue, I was like, well, that's the way I know how to find books. So yeah. I guess I just won't.
It
like,
was the
read
same for my dad and bagels.
Really?
I'd go to his house every Sunday. He'd make bagels. And I like never eat bagels anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Have he passed away?
Yeah, he passed away.
When did he die?
2015. Yeah.
Same.
No way.
Wow.
We joined the Dead Dad Club
the
same
what
year.
What month?
September.
October.
No kidding.
No way. What'd he die on?
So there I was crying and you were right behind me.
Yeah. Wow.
Pancreatic cancer.
Mm,
yeah.
Right.
But he made it 2 years after the diagnosis. So he did he fought pretty good against what is, you know, a pretty deadly
diagnosis was.
Yeah. What about your dad?
Brain cancer.
Okay.
Yeah. 1 year.
Okay.
And you don't eat bagels that much anymore.
No,
it's weird, right?
And it is weird. Yeah, there's just these things that slip, you know? Yeah, and my dad was Jewish, and so there's all these things in the world I'd love to just, you know, our dads died before Trump got elected,
right before
yes. Game of Thrones ended, all these significant things, Trump and Game of Thrones, you know, and everything that followed,
the pandemic,
it's like, whoa, they just never knew about it.
I know. Our reality is so starkly different now than
yes.
when they were alive.
I do like in that like certain cynical thought, I'm envy him, you know, it's like, oh yeah, you got to miss out on a lot of psychic terror.
Right. I used to have a joke that was like when the subway doors are closing and you like get right in before they close. Like that was my dad, but right before Trump got elected, he just like got in, it's like, I'm out.
I'm good.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I got enough yeah, I think was it that you saw this
I saw
stamp?
This. Yes,
yeah,
that
so
is
inside
a very
this book is the
evocative
stamp.
Thing. I'm like, oh, I remember that.
Like when libraries used to stamp the due date of your book, which they don't do anymore. So it's kind of awesome that it's on the first page of this. And I feel like that's what drew your
And
your
you know what else is
it.
Like interesting about like libraries and the stamp is like there was something about like you have this, it was almost like a deadline. You had the book and you
yes.
had a deadline. So there was some urgency. Whereas maybe
yes.
with buying books, they're just like, there and there's less of a feeling of
100%.
It's like, oh, I'll read that another time or something. But yeah, seeing that, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember the feeling of I got it.
Yeah,
I have 3 weeks or whatever it was.
Lights a fire under you.
It does.
I just checked a book out yesterday, 2 days ago, and I hadn't done that in a long time, and it was that same feeling. It was like, okay, the last time I checked a book out from the library, I read it.
Right.
You know, and so it does skip to the front of the pack in my collection.
Almost the same with movies. Like when it used to be where you would rent a movie, there was a thing like, well, this is the movie we're going to watch tonight. Whereas now I feel it's easier to be like, well, that'll be on this.
So true. Well, a movie would come out in the theater and you'd be like, well, I got to see it now or there's going to be 6 months where I can't see it.
True.
And they would delay that. I think probably for that reason.
That is so true. I forgot about that gap.
Yeah,
so
that
it was like, I want to see it because if not, I'm going to be out of the
zeitgeist.
The zeitgeist, that's it, exactly.
And then, you know, it would show up at the movie rental place. It would be a new release. It would have that red on the Blockbuster,
yes.
you know, and you're like, okay,
it's hot.
Got to get this. And that's a great point.
When Netflix says, like, leaving soon, I do feel like I tend to watch it more because I'm like, I got to grab it all again. Yeah. Yeah, whereas a book, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's around. It'll be there.
It does make me, not to get too deep, but we were talking about our dads. It makes you think, what if people had those on them too? And
well, of
like,
course.
This person's going to be. I mean, I guess that's what happens
and
when a person gets a sickness diagnosis.
Because I remember, like, so much about that year. That year I can see in fucking like 3D
because
it's like it was moving. Time was moving like so slowly and so fast because it was just like you were so aware of, you only have this much time left.
Yeah.
It's trippy. And it's like, why can't we hold on to that for longer? I don't know. It goes away.
But yeah.
We all have a limited time. So it's like we should be doing that. But you just kind of forget when you don't have the actual stamp, like.
Yeah, I think it's like probably a survival thing, right? Like,
I think
you're just
so.
Like, yeah, if you were in that state of mind all the time, you would probably be going. I mean, you'd just be in grief your entire life, which you,
true.
Like you hinted at earlier, you are kind of.
Once
you enter that room, the door closes behind you, and
definitely.
The world's different, and you're different.
Definitely.
And then you approach your new losses in your ways.
I definitely do think I was like that first year. I don't know about you, but the first year after my dad died, I do feel I was like. Like not manic, but like,
yeah,
I was doing I was very aware of like, oh my God, I might die tomorrow.
Yeah.
I have to like do absolute. So that might be it too, is like, you can't really sustain that energy. Like if the energy of like, I might die tomorrow is,
yeah,
you probably can't sustain that. Cause then you're like, I gotta do everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not plan and not, you
right,
know,
right.
Like, find stability.
Right, exactly.
Which those things do help, especially in the nature and shape of our society right,
right.
now.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But.
It would be interesting if you just ran around. Because I was doing the same. I was running around.
Yeah.
I was like traveling. I was like, just like, okay, I just watched this man slowly
disappear.
Lose everything,
yes.
Disappear, evaporate. And so it's like, I need to like kickstart into.
Exactly.
Into. Yeah.
Doing or live. Yeah,
living.
Exactly.
Pretty profound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you with him? Like, was
yeah.
he on the East Coast?
He was on the East Coast, but I was on the. Were you in New York first or no?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, yeah, right.
I just visited.
Yeah, no, I started in New York. So I was in New York. And then when he got sick, I moved home. So
okay.
I was still coming back to New York every now and again, but mostly I was based in Massachusetts.
Yeah, with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my dad was out in the valley. So I would just drive out there for every appointment and hang out and. You know, then you'd be driving him home and he'd like give the directions to his house. And it's like, no, Dad, come on. I know where you live. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, he was like trying to retain some sense of fatherly control.
Definitely.
And, but yeah, it was funny. All the little ways they still drive you crazy because they're your parent.
Totally.
And but yeah, the profound act of showing up for them and taking care of them in some way is pretty cool.
Well, this is, I have my dad, so my dad read, you know, all the time, and he had a real rule too of like never finish a book without starting another one. So if he finished a book, he would immediately start another one because he was like, that's the hardest part is that getting to the next book.
Okay,
and then once
yeah.
you get to the next book, you're in.
Yeah.
So he was
a little, he had a similar mind as you. He found a different workaround.
Right.
Right?
That's true.
He was like, okay, starting doesn't feel great, so I'm going to just like.
Oh, you're right.
Not even think about
you're
it.
You're right.
Go to it. I mean, but it doesn't, it's like you're not obligated to read books. Like there's so many different ways to live your life.
No, it's true, but I always feel better when I'm reading. It
right.
does feel like exercise where it's like it does, once you're doing it, especially with my phone. I'm on my phone a lot.
Yeah.
Did you
I
see
know.
That tweet where it was like someone had back problems for being on their phone for 4 hours a day?
I
and everyone
it.
Was going around being like, 4 hours?
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I'm like, oh my God, 4 hours. That's like
that was pre-pandemic phone
yeah,
time. And
that was, yeah. I mean, granted, a lot of our job is on our phones, but
right.
still, I'm on my phone too much. So I think when I'm in a book, it's such a nice feeling of like, oh, I'm
it
just
is.
In this.
That's and I wonder how many books we read on our phones every week just by matter of the amount of words,
sure.
the amount of words we encounter.
Totally.
Like,
we are reading.
We are reading books, but it's like so scattered. It's not rooted in deep thought or long research or expertise. It's just in things that are going to keep your animal brain glued to it.
Totally.
And I'm just totally guilty of it.
Same.
And I think the pandemic...
Yeah.
Worsened it for everyone.
Definitely.
That first year was just so psychically bad for everyone.
Totally.
And all I know is like I didn't ever use Amazon before and now suddenly I have an Amazon card and it's like, all right, so if we're going to say this was a conspiracy,
totally.
The rich got richer, you know?
Oh, yeah. Remember it was like, it literally was like Jeff Bezos made like XYZ and it was the exact amount that like the common like the average American
lost.
It was like exactly like all went to Bezos. We all were like, well, I guess you'll deliver my toilet paper. Like it was yeah.
Buy your girlfriend a new dress, I guess, on me.
Yeah, on me. Yeah.
Yeah, now he's kind of doing this thing where he's like post divorce, he has a cool girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
like cool middle age, like they're like they have stylists dressing them
yeah.
to look like cool people and show up to cool events. And
you can always tell when that switch happens.
Right.
They're starting to layer. They're starting
yeah,
to.
Yeah, starting
there's
to layer.
Like little things where oh. you're like, that's a stylist. Yeah,
stylist did that.
Stylist did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the teeth, the famous people teeth.
Which, that to me, I'm a teeth, I like them, I don't love, I mean, who does, but I get really worried about chipping teeth, and I hate dentists. I hate when they drill.
I know.
The fact that people get veneers, you have to get rid of your teeth, right?
Do you really?
I'm pretty sure that's how it works. I think you have to get rid of them. I think you have to, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Ha. Ah.
Yeah.
They're going to go anyway.
Yeah, they're going to go anyway.
There's
going
to be a wait for that. Give yourself something to look forward to. If you make it to old age, God forbid.
Yeah.
Get yourself some beautiful veneers at 80 when they're all out.
So that's what veneers are. My mind, they were like, they're like capped onto your teeth.
That's right. But I think they're capped onto smaller versions of your teeth.
Oh, boy.
So you have to go. It's the ultimate commitment. You go, okay.
Yeah, well, and I don't smile enough.
Yeah.
For it to even be worth it.
I'm kind of a closed mouth smile.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
I'm learning that.
Also, you.
They're fine.
Yeah, same.
They're fine.
They're fine. I've had
one pulled out, whatever.
I didn't have braces, did you?
No.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I went to, I go to the student dentist because they're.
No. Of all the professions to go, hairdresser, like. Oh, not like, a
let's
student.
Roll the dice. Let's roll the dice with everything up above my neck. Why not?
Oh, you know? My God.
And what with them, they cost half as much, but they take twice as long. So, like, the torture just endures long after any human's supposed to handle it.
God.
So, yeah, I've definitely ghosted them, but I did go in for a couple things, and they were like, hey, so you know, you have, like, whatever your bite's off, you do need braces.
No,
and I was like,
we're beyond
I'm not
that.
Doing this.
Yeah, I don't.
And the woman's like, no, but, like, you're going to think about it. You're going to live another 60 years, and I'm like, what are you? I'm 38. I'm not living another 60
well,
years.
Well, that's, I think, our death thing, too, though, because I'm all, when people are like, you got to have a retirement fund, I'm like, well.
Yeah.
No.
Right?
So I think that's because we watched something bad happen.
Yeah.
Because I don't really plan too much for the distant future, because I'm like, I don't even know if that's in the, I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll cross that bridge if I get there.
Exactly.
If.
That's, yeah.
Or I'll drive off the bridge is the other retirement plan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No.
It just, it wouldn't even make sense for me to try at this point.
Yeah, I'm
like,
never
try to plan.
Thinking like, that. I'll think like 5 years out, but I'm not in the 40 years out because that to me is just like, yeah.
That's greedy.
What?
That's greedy. It's
greedy. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's greedy.
I think my plan in my head is like, okay, if I get there and a bunch of, and God willing, a few people I know get there, it's like, all right, let's just band together and be some old people who buy a little plot of land or move into an apartment together.
I love that.
You know what I mean?
I'm always seeing things on Instagram where it's like, these friends bought a house and they
cool.
all live there. That's
okay,
great.
I got to get on that algorithm because I think that's where my plan lives.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think also we're comedian. We didn't, there's not a lot. Like, we've lived with roommates. We've lived, I'm fine with it. I'm like, yeah, I don't need to have a place in Florida.
Likewise, yeah.
I need to be in Florida.
No, likewise, I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good on Florida.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll go wherever they take me. Yeah, let's
see what else I got in
here.
Yeah,
let's bump a little down the list.
Okay, let's
see.
So
Sally Rooney's
Sally
check.
Rooney, yeah, check. She's just, yeah, she's great. Okay.
What else did you bring? What do you want to talk about the most in this pile of five books that you brought?
Well, oh, gosh. I tried to bring things that, like, sort of changed my life. I'd say this book really changed my life, Letters to a Young Poet. Have you ever read it?
I've had people recommend it to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
On this podcast?
No.
Okay.
You're the first.
Okay, because I was going to say we could move on. I would say, okay, so Letters to a Young Poet and Thich Nhat Hanh are two, both these books I think really, like, changed my life in end of college, early as a creative.
Okay.
But they both really, I guess, boil down to, like, acceptance, probably. I feel my tendency is to fight the...
To try to control things
yes.
that you can't.
Yeah, which is, yeah, that. So I think both of these were really good at kind of calming that side of me. And, yeah, real good. This book, like, you remember when you first wanted to do comedy?
Yeah, I remember when my mom told me it would be a good idea, because I'm a failed child actor, so it's all muddled, right?
Wait, what does that mean, a failed child
Like, it
actor?
Means, like, I auditioned for a bunch of stuff as a child and adolescent, and I was in a George Foreman grill commercial, but that was, like, the pinnacle of it.
Interesting.
Yeah, so then I started writing and just got obsessed with writing, trying to write scripts, and then, like, was tired of being in my own head, so then I went and started doing stand-up in my late 20s.
Well, I thought you were joking. So you had the opposite experience of most people, where your parents were like, no, this is, you should go
yeah,
into.
Yeah, the delusion is like of that was given to me is like inseparable from my upbringing. So yeah, it's this
wow.
really confused.
Were your parents in the business?
No, like my mom always dreamt of being an actor, and we lived out in the valley, so we were near it, you know, and she had all these cute little kids, so that she tried with all of them, and it kind of just landed on me.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah, that's something I'm trying to write about.
Of course.
Like a book proposal that may come out at some point.
That makes sense. That's obviously the first thing I thought of. I'm like, well, you gotta, that's
yeah.
that's interesting. That's cool.
So as someone who elected to do comedy, are you saying Letters to a Young Poet kind of
it helped
sparked
me a lot
that?
Because, no. I think that helped me when I was in that phase of, you know, I grew up, my dad was a salesman, my mom was a teacher. It was very, like, safety and security was a big thing that was
a value in your
a
household.
Value, and it was almost like to not have that was I don't think it's that, like, I think my parents very much were happy for me to pursue a creative path. My dad was very funny. We did sketch as a kid together. We did, like, community theater. But I think the security and the feeling of, like, well, you have to have something to hold on to was scary. So I, like, worked in finance for a year, and then once I hit the one-year mark, I quit because my dad was like, you got to get it on your resume, which is so funny because even, like, the idea of, like, resume,
yeah.
like having a finance job for a year,
yeah.
it doesn't really, yeah.
But in the world that existed when
yes.
your dad was in his prime working years, that was a thing.
Totally. It was like you have to have 10 years at a place
yeah.
on your resume. So one was like the bare minimum. So I remember quitting that job to be like, I want to act and be a comedian, and not being that or not knowing how to do that. That was a very scary thing because I knew I wanted to do it, but I wasn't doing it. So I think that's the hardest phase, because once you start doing it and people start seeing you do it, they go like, awesome. There's no one who's not going to say that's fucking awesome once you're doing it.
That's cool.
Because you're doing it, and
yeah.
so people are seeing you do it.
Yeah.
The hard part, I think, is those, like, 5 years in between where people were kind of like, wait, what are you doing? And you don't really have an answer because
yeah.
I wasn't, you know, I was trying, but trying, you can't really show trying. And Rilke talks just a lot about, like, I think the trying phase. And there's, like, one passage that I'll butcher, but it's basically just someone's coming, reaching out to him being like, are my poems good? Are these good? And he's like, you ask me if these are good. Why does that matter? It
yeah.
doesn't matter. You can't, me thinking they're good doesn't matter. Do you think they're good? Are you writing from a place of truth? And if you're doing that, that's all that actually matters. And this book saves my life, like, over and over. I feel like it helped me back then. And then it helps me as a more established person when you're, like, at every stage, I feel I've gone back to it because, yeah, when you're not making stuff, it was helpful. And then when I'm making stuff, it's also helpful to come back to, like, well, do I think this is good? If I think something's good, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
If I don't think something's good, that's when I'm going to be worried what you think of it.
Yeah. And that idea was introduced to you through this book?
This book.
Wow.
And I want to remember who gave it to me. I should have looked into it, but it was someone from college.
Really?
Was someone in college, like, or some professor who suggested it to me, I believe. And yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That it landed.
Totally.
It landed, and it's something that worked for the way you think. And
yeah.
It's like everyone who strives to create things and want to be heard and stuff has these moments in figuring out what this all means to themselves, aside
totally.
From the fact that it's like a bunch of early issues that probably are finding their way into your adult life. But it really is like the beauty in trying. And something in my head was just like, look, I think I'm here to explore and explain my existence to myself. Mm. How nice to have a practice where I can like get deeper into those explanations.
Totally.
Or at least attempt.
Totally. And yeah. I became like, I feel the minute I quit that finance job and was on the path to trying, I felt a large sense of peace that has never gone away.
Wow. So you've just been in alignment with yourself.
That's right. So it's like, obviously there's a whole new amount of stressors and chaos and like anguish that I've felt for different reasons, but that like base level of up until I was trying, knowing I wanted to try and I wasn't, that like ate at me.
And were you in New York for that finance job?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're already in a city where things
and
can
I was
go.
Doing, and I was like doing UCB, so I...
You're doing
I
improv.
Was, yeah, but I was a... It just wasn't viable because I was a consultant. I was like leaving every Monday through Thursday to go to different states.
And, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is another crazy thing that I was like a 22-year-old psychology major.
Wow.
Who was like wearing a suit and going to like Bose and telling them...
Who was
them,
that?
Who was... Yeah, it's just... But, yeah, I think there's a real reality where I'm still doing that. So I think every day I am, you know, I am grounded in like, okay, well, I am doing what I want to do.
What you want to do. That's amazing. Not everyone could say that.
Yeah.
And so you were like playing the weirdest character that you'll maybe as an actor ever
totally.
Play was like the finance traveler at 22.
Totally.
It's like what 22-year-old should be in a suit?
Well, that's it. It's like we were all playing a role because there's no way any of us at 22 were like.
Wanted to be there.
Or it was a great job. I really liked it. It was just, I was like, I couldn't possibly be qualified to be doing this. There's no way I'm qualified to be doing this, which also made me be like, probably a lot of our world is built on people who are not necessarily qualified and then just learn as they go.
Yeah. And also like what,
like your dentist, your student dentist,
they
must go to work going, I got a bunch of tools.
Oh yeah.
I hope I'm pulling the right one.
All right. Going to dig through the mouth today
we'll
and hope for the best.
Yeah.
I know it's really rolling the dice.
Yeah. They're just like,
and
you
they
need
also...
braces. Cause that's the only thing that they get. They're just like,
and then the worst, well, the thing is their supervisor will come in and their experienced teaching dentists, you know, and they'll do a little work on your mouth and you'll be like, oh, this is what it could be. I could be in these hands right now. God.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
4 hours later, someone coming in going, oh,
yeah.
Okay. That's
okay.
What it was supposed to feel like. Okay. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Hey, you got to do what you got to do. But yeah, it's...
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Reminds me of one time I had to get a tooth pulled out at that student dentist. Yeah.
Maybe. You don't know. Maybe the student was just like, let's take this
she
one out.
She said something about needing to get home to do her homework and that it was either get it pulled or, well, and her overseer. Something about me is I require a lot of like anesthetic. They keep giving me shots. Like
you're
it
weak.
Doesn't.
You're
yeah,
weak.
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah, no, I'm like, I can feel it. They're like, you're really sensitive.
Wait, what do you mean you require it?
Like
you...
I just still have sensation as
they keep
giving me more and more shots. But anyway, I don't even know.
No,
if
that's
this
not
is
your
story
weak.
Where...
Actually, that's you feel.
That's me having a high tolerance to opiates. And they're like, oh, okay, you're in the right place, you know. And,
yeah.
But no, I'm not a regular opiate user. I don't know if this happened when your dad was sick, but like I'd have to go pick up his painkillers. And I'm not like the most put together looking person. So I'd be like, these are for my dad. Like they'd question me a little more and they'd be like, now, you know, you're going to have to see two forms of ID for this. And it's like, hey, I'm just, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I was from a small town. Our hospice nurse like lived two doors
down.
Okay. So ours was all just, very just like, hey, Judy, how are you? Yeah. Come on over. Yeah.
I'm at the CVS fighting for my reputation.
Two forms of ID.
Yeah. All right. It was for my dad,
your
which, of course, is a likely story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no front tooth. I swear. It's for my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, yeah. Anyway, I think there was an end, or was there no end to the story? You had to get the tooth pulled.
Wasn't a good story. I liked the direction we turned. Okay. It was just the doctor, he wasn't wearing a breathing mask, so he was like breathing into my mouth as he's like, and it's like, so I guess the measure of a person's like politeness is how long you take the dentist's spit in your mouth before you have to tell him, please. And I went like 15, 20, 30 seconds, and I finally raised my hand, and I was like, Doc, like, I'm sorry, but you're like breathing in my mouth. He was like, oh, yeah, sorry. No, and he put the mask over his face.
Wow, see, that's good. I thought you were going to say minutes. Seconds is great.
No, yeah. No, I think I can be pretty, I will like speak for myself.
I'm getting better at that.
You are.
That's been a growth for me. That was something very hard for me for a while.
Yeah, to like vouch for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Or to speak up even if it might cause friction. Right. I would have rather been like no friction even if I'm like, you know,
Yeah, you'll take the spit.
Yeah, but no, I am trying to get better at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's... Yeah.
No, you
not
have
me,
to.
Not me, who? It's, yeah. Who,
the system
who
is
helping?
Set up to,
yeah.
like, run people over, and then that bleeds into our personal lives.
Totally.
And so at some point you have to, like, you know, just, so oftentimes people just need to be made aware of their own, like,
right.
steamrolling behaviors or whatever it may be. But
and even in that situation, it's like, it doesn't harm him to tell, like, was like, because what's the worst case scenario? He gets really... mad, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was low stakes.
Yeah. But in still, it's, yeah. Yeah.
If it had been like an important business contact breathing in my mouth, I'd be like, is my mouth open wide enough?
Do you have any other colleagues who want to breathe in my mouth? That's fine. Yeah. Yeah.
So as I guess we're winding down your pile, what's the last book that we haven't talked about?
Okay, so we have a play called Sunday on the Rocks by Teresa Rebeck that I really love.
Have you performed this play, or is this something you're just interested in and you like?
Just in, I've performed scenes of it in a class before.
Okay.
Never beyond it, but this one was like my favorite play I read because it felt very, at the time I was like, oh, this is kind of feeling like what I'm going through of just... when you get to that age where all your friends are, you know, you're all kind of having different struggles. You're all making different choices in life, but having different struggles, which I think is kind of a comforting thing, perhaps. It's like there's no route to go that keeps you without trouble.
No, I went to a dinner a few months ago to meet up with a bunch of old high school friends, and all of them, all these guys, their dads. And I don't have any kids. And some part of me was like pretty self-conscious going there. I was like, I'm like behind, you know. And so I got there and I made some sort of little apology or, you know, statement, like little joke like that. And this guy I hadn't seen in 10 years was just like, dude, what are you talking about? I'm so jealous of you.
Exactly.
You know, and like you're just like, okay, cool.
Totally.
Like, we're all just kind of... on the fence.
Totally. We're all trying our best, and then with your decision you go, okay, this has good parts and bad parts. It's like, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I really like that. And then similarly, actually, The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, this was a recommendation from my best friend, and she really loved it, and I probably read this in like a couple days.
Okay.
And that The Midnight Library is a stunning book if you are feeling any sense of that, of like you've maybe made the wrong choice or you're feeling sorry about your life, thinking of other ways it could have gone.
Yeah.
This is an excellent book for that.
Okay.
A really great book for allowing, kind of exploring what it would look like if you made different choices. And
really?
Even more different choices and more different choices and kind of... Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but that's what it's about.
My interest is piqued.
Well, and what did I say at the beginning of this? I don't hold on to books, so that's going in your pile. That's going in your pile.
You.
Absolutely, that's going in your pile. It's a really comforting
book.
Wow. And I think everyone would be better off reading it, especially if you are someone who's dealing with that. Who isn't?
For someone who regrets their existence.
That is a perfect book for you. It's a, and I think we all, everyone's got choices where you go, is that the right one? And that book really helps.
Wow.
With that question.
Thank you so much for
of
this.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm going to zip through it, especially if it's a fast read.
Definitely.
And, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Of course. What about you? We didn't talk about any of yours.
Oh, well, we talked about the...
we talked about them.
Mine are kind of like, they're like, if it comes up books.
I see.
I feel like yours are the...
So actually, the fact that we didn't get to yours means we did well.
Yeah, and you know, I did want to say, like, you love giving away books. I don't love it. So what I've, but I love giving. So what I do now is I go to used book sales, and if I see a book I already have, I buy it. And now in my room, I have like four different stacks that I'm giving to different family members and friends. And I've already done it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I build these piles of books I already have and I give away the doubles.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. That's nice.
But that's what I mean. It's the emotional support thing where it's like, oh, yeah, I want to hang on to this book because it's like.
I like that,
though. Cradling me just by being around me, which is, you know, to be fixated on material. I see these Instagrams of like book influencers and they like make these dominoes of the 160 books they read that year and then they knock them down. And I get it's a visual medium, whatever, but I don't love the idea of like books as fetish or books as, you know.
Totally.
I don't know. Yeah. So like just you giving me this book is like such a, well, I receive it with a lot of gratitude.
Oh, of course. Of course. And it makes me happy because I'm like, well, I've already read it. I don't want to get rid of it because that feels wrong. And so to be able to be like, oh, now you get to read it. That makes me feel good.
Thank you.
So you're giving me a gift by accepting it.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Okay. And I'll give it to someone else after, after I read
maybe, or you can hold on to it and buy a duplicate of it. Give that one to someone else. Yes, yes.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to say about books?
No, the only thing I would say is if you have a book that, maybe once you read that, if you have a book, like, and you're like, okay, Alyssa liked this.
Yeah.
If you have a book that you think I'd like, let me know, because I love a recommendation. I generally take a recommendation. I just have trouble going blind into the world.
Okay, let me get to a book I brought then.
Okay.
And we'll wrap it up. I brought Werner Herzog's Walking in Ice. I don't think this is the book.
Okay.
I just think it's this weird book I read last year.
Ooh,
you know
I
Werner
love
Herzog,
that title.
The documentary.
I mean, of Walking in Ice. I love that.
And it lives in that visceral place because this is like, I don't know, he's maybe in his 30s when he wrote this. His mentor, one of his mentors is this woman. She's living in Paris and she gets sick.
Mm.
And he's in Munich, he's in Germany. And he decides he's going to walk to her in the dead of winter as a pilgrimage for her and like for her health. And she ultimately ends up not dying. So who's to say the pilgrimage didn't work? But
wow,
you know, and he's a dramatic man. So
right, and even that notion I could talk about for a while.
I know
of like the idea of someone suffering and then you suffering.
You creating
as well. I don't
a deeper
know if that's, I don't know who that helps. I'm not sure who that
like,
helps.
He's like thinks that maybe you could balance out the universe by assuming some of that suffering voluntarily.
Yeah, that's my hope. But that's what I'm trying to fight
off,
I think. Is that no? Because I think it's, I don't know if that does help anyone. And
I'm
then
not
you're
sure
both
it does.
Just burned. And then when your time comes to suffer, then what happens? You've already suffered voluntarily.
You've just added more suffering.
I think so.
Yeah, instead of like appreciated the balance of maybe not being the suffering one for
a
period of time.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that math. So anyway, he just like he sleeps in barns and it's just like this very visceral, weird kind of stream of thought, like diary entries that just jumped out at me at my bookcase before I came. This book's really good. Three Women.
Okay.
Lisa Tadeo.
I feel I've
a lot of people were reading this over the last few years. She was like a great journalist when magazines were a thing. And she just follows these three different women in different economic classes with different dramas in their lives, some of them much more severe than others. And just the way she like humanizes, not like elevates the humanity of these people who are suffering things that a lot of people are going through. The most extreme is like this high school girl who has an affair with a teacher.
Whoa.
And the teacher, I mean, I don't know that you call it an affair. You call
sure,
it some
sure.
kind of predatory
something.
Thing.
I think right.
You know what I mean? It's not really an affair. That's like, that's an adult thing. That's what French people do, and it's okay in France.
Totally. They're always French. Totally. Right.
But anyway, yeah, it's like a, I don't know. I zip through it.
Okay, that I think I should put down because I do remember a lot of people.
You're saying you should put it down? You would read it?
Yeah.
Okay, then it's yours.
No. Yes. I can't.
It's yours. I have a duplicate of it.
You sure?
Yeah. I'm just going to not give away the duplicate. And I'll find another duplicate and give it away. Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes. But don't feel pressured to read it.
There's no pressure, but I'm going to read it.
Okay.
I'm
it is heavy. It is at times.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay.
But
the writing's like gorgeous and it's like, yeah, it's a quick read too.
Oh my gosh. Great. Okay. Wait, there was one that I wanted to talk about that I didn't have at home. Who's the Molly White? Hi Molly. Who's the? Why can't I think of her name? Superstar.
Oh yeah, Molly Ring.
I know
that's not
that's
her
what
name.
I know, but that's
Molly Shannon.
Yeah, okay. Molly Shannon's book.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Is stunning.
Really?
Memoir. My favorite memoir I've ever read. She's an incredible human, and that really was a helpful, reminder for me of how to live life. It harkened back to like after. I feel that's a good read for someone,
okay.
Especially if you're in our business.
Yeah, cool.
And probably cliche pick, which I've also given away, but It Ends With Us is...
It Ends With Us.
Have you heard of this book?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Okay, It Ends With Us is... I didn't have that at home because I gave that away, but that's a book that also changed my life.
Really?
About cycles of abuse.
Okay.
It's a beautiful heart-wrenching,
yeah.
Wonderful read. So anyway... That'll be for next time.
I'll
collect them back from my people.
Well, this is the first book trade that's occurred on this podcast.
Wow!
So I feel like, we do have to do a follow-up at some point and
Great.
Then add on. And I just really appreciate you bringing in a bunch of books that were like life-changing.
Of course.
Because it's been profound to listen to. And
thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about them.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Same.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Catch you next time.
Yeah. And that's Turek Books Podcast out.